Great. He's a worldwide citizen, I would say. He's an artist, and he has been a Paralympic and has won medals in swimming. And did I see that you've done an Ironman? Where was that?
It was in Korea.
Korea.
In Jeju Island, yeah.
Wow. So he obviously has done well with his life. And he has a wonderful wife named Angie, who's also an artist.
She's a photographer and a graphic designer.
Okay. So he was in Switzerland a couple weeks ago, kind of trying to figure out what he was going to talk about before that. So we get to hear what he talked about.
So if I'd never been asked to do a commencement talk before, so it was it's called the École Hôtelière de Lausanne. It's a hotel school in Lausanne. And they have two graduating classes. One is a French stream and one is an English stream. So they did two separate commencement gatherings on two different days. So they asked me to speak at both. But fortunately, I was able to do both of them in English. But I did start with a little French and a little Chinese just to mix it up. But so it was a challenge for me to do that because I do speak to schools and companies and different groups, but I'd never spoken to a group of 22 to 28 year olds who are fairly well to do and have just graduated, and they kind of have their life in front of them. So I wasn't sure what to talk about. So I spent at least a month trying to figure out, talking to all sorts of people, old and young, and trying to figure out what to say. And I went through about four or five different versions of what I thought I should say. And in the end, I said, well, instead of trying to think about what I think I should tell them, I should just tell them what, not so much what I know is true, but something that, tell them what I've learned. If I've learned anything in the last 60 years, what might that be? So that after going around the barn again and again and again and again, I finally came up, and then I changed it too. So I had the first day and the second day. So after the first day, I changed it on the second day. So, and because you're kind of the third day, I'm going to change it on you too. So it's just a matter of rearranging things. So here we go. So anyway, I started with appreciate. So appreciate, and I tell the story about my parents, how much I appreciated them, especially my mother, how she, I had polio when I was a year old, and when I went to school, at the age of five, my first grade class, they took me to the regular school for people like yourselves that are not disabled. Prior to that, they had taken me to the school for disabled people, disabled children, and at that time, it was all kinds of disabled kids, mentally, physically, disabled. And I really, even at the age of five, I kind of sensed that I didn't belong there. I didn't feel right. It didn't feel... So anyway, I asked if we could go to the regular school. So my mother took me to the regular school and introduced me. We met the principal and we looked around the school, and the principal was very nice, and I was very cute, and he thought it'd be great if I could go there, but unfortunately I couldn't because there were steps to get to the second floor of the school and there was no elevator. So the principal said, I'm sorry, Mrs. Burns, your son can't go to school here because there are steps. But my mother said, well, if that's the case, if he can prove that he can climb the steps, can he go to school here? And the principal agreed to that. So my father built a pair of steps in the backyard of our house in Washington, D.C. That summer, I climbed up and down those, practiced going up and down those steps all summer long. And then when fall came around, I went to the principal and proved myself that I could climb the steps and was allowed to go to that school. And that was one of the, I think, turning points of my life, because I ended up going in a regular stream, kind of, with as you will, able-bodied people in a normal situation. And I learned a lot. And so, I appreciate my parents for that and many, many other things. And it's also about appreciating, your teachers and your family and your friends and your, the people who believe in you. So I was just trying to remind them to believe, trust, appreciate those who have helped you along the way. The second talk point I was called trust, and that was because I remembered when I was graduating from college and I really didn't know what I wanted to do, and I wasn't sure if all they wanted knew what they wanted to do, but I ended up traveling a while and, you know, banging around for a while, but it was I was faced with two choices. One was to a couple years after college was either going to go to the Peace Corps to go to Marrakesh, Morocco, or go to Taipei, Taiwan with San Jose State program to study Chinese art. So I followed my heart, I followed my art, and I went to Taiwan, and that was 1984. And I have yet to come back to live in America, as you well know, so I'm still out there. So that was the second one. The third one was maximize, and I think it's important that we maximize what we have. And there was a swim meet I went to long ago in Hawaii, and there I watched these Paralympians. I was in the Paralympics 3 times, and I went to a lot of different events. And there was a swim meet, and I was in the swim meet. And in the Paralympics, there are 10 classifications for the different disabilities. So you have class one is a quadriplegic or somebody without arms or legs or without the use of the arms or the legs. And then class 10 would be, as I jokingly say, well, probably a class 10 is some of you young people tonight after you've had a few too many drinks on your way home. That would be kind of a class 10, but that's a joke. But that was, you know, missing a hand or a foot or something minor, you know. So compared to a one, missing a foot is not a big, is like whoopee. But anyway, so I was at the swim meet, and there was this class one, and there was a young man who had no arms and he had no legs, but he had a thumb that stuck out of his shoulder, and he had his wedding band on that. And then he was swimming, he was gonna swim. So his assistant, he was in a wheelchair, and his assistant pushed him to the side of the swimming pool and literally gave him a little shove, and he was in the water and kind of bouncing up and down, and the guy had to hold him against the side of the pool before the gun went off so he could swim. And so the gun went off, bang, and he started swimming. And you know, if you really have no arms and legs, you kind of swim like a tadpole like that. And then you know, every once in a while you have to breathe, so he had to throw his body all the way over on one side and take a breath, and then go back down and swim along. And you know, he'd been training all these years to go as fast as he could and to get to the wall, go as fast as he could and hit the wall as quickly as he could. And of course the first thing to hit the wall would of course been his head. So he had to, you know, he was training and to go faster and faster, and every time he, you know, he'd bang his head harder and harder again. So I just was very, you know, that really reminded me that, you know, it's important to make the most of what we do have. And so that was a maximize what we have. And then I nurture was to, you know, nurture your heart, your art. For me, nurture my art, or for you it might be singing or dancing or swimming or whatever those things, meditating, whatever those things are that help you stay centered and connected to yourself. And and that's a good thing to do, because it's kind of like putting stuff into a bank account, where later in life, maybe not right now, but when you're having hard times, you'll have that kind of reservoir or a bank account of energy you've kind of put into yourself, so you know that, oh, I can handle this, I can make it through. So that was nurture. And then nature is, I think, an important healing place for all of us, so we can again get close to nature, get close to the universe and ourselves. And I tell about a story about when I climbed this mountain in Canada, and I was climbing all day and I was sweating, and I got to the top of this mountain and I looked over in the distance and there were a bunch of bighorn sheep, about a dozen of them. They were just sitting there, and I was like amazed, because this is not a zoo, this is a mountain, this is the middle of nowhere. And I got to the top of the mountain and they saw me and I saw them, and they didn't run away. And I was very, I wonder how close I could get to them. So I started walking, you know, gingerly closer and closer to them. And by and by, I got to be within about 10 feet of them. And then one of the big guys got up, and I thought, you know, either I'm in the right place or the wrong place right now, because this could get interesting. But anyway, this bighorn sheep, he got up and he walked over towards me. He started to sniff me, and then he went over to my crutch in my hand, which I was holding, and he started to lick my hand and lick my crutch, because all the salt that I had sweated climbing up the mountain was interesting to him. And I was in heaven. I thought, this is amazing. You know, this is, how close can you get to God or the universe at this point? So I was very touched with that. And then, let's see, what was the last point? The last point was, if you have Alzheimer's, you should have notes. Yeah, one step at a time, yeah. So that was, the other thing was, in our lives, you know, in the Iron Man or in anything, you know, it's always, or climbing mountains, I've always found that it's best to try to do things one step at a time and not get discouraged by, you know, looking at an entire mountain and thinking you have to jump to the top of it when in fact you can't. You can only just do one little step at a time and take one, you know, whether it's one test or one piece of paperwork or one stroke or one step at a time. It's how we reach the top of our mountains, is by just, you know, breaking things down into manageable bite-sized pieces. And then I closed with, I had some videos throughout this, which I'm sadly not showing you here, but I closed with the realization or the fact that, you know, we're all challenged, you know, mentally, physically, spiritually, whatever. And, you know, we all have to face things like that. And, you know, it's really, in the end, it's up to us to make the best of what we have, to do those things we know we need to do to have a straight life, or to help ourselves and to help our fellow men and women in the world to overcome our challenges, and maybe help other people overcome their challenges as well. Then I close with a video that is only 1 minute long. It has really good music, really strong music, and it's a guy, I've never met him, but he's in a wheelchair. He had spina bifida, and he's in a wheelchair, and he does this BMX jump on his wheelchair. So he goes down something like the Olympics we just saw, this really, really steep chute. He goes down in his wheelchair, and he jumps, and he does a flip. And he does this a couple times, and he crashes a couple times, and then finally, at the very end of the song and very end of the video, he lands the jump, and he lands in the wheelchair, and he goes down. And I said, you know, some of you might feel this way about as you set out onto your life, but, you know, things will work out, and congratulations. So that was my talk.
So I have a question. When you made the comment when you graduated from which direction were you going to go?
Yeah.
When you look back now, what do you see?
I see a lot of confusion. I was very confused with what I wanted to do with my life, and I think I'm very, I think I made the right choice, but at the time I wouldn't have known it. You know, at the time it was very, you know, turn left, turn right. I could do either one, and they both seemed good. And that I was never I never had a lack of good options. It was trying to find the best option, I thought. I do remember a time of being very confused and lost, literally lost. And I'm just kind of surprised that I made it through. Or, I mean, I guess we always make it through eventually, but I mean, I made it to where I am now, which is, you know, that what I stepped into, which was following my art and following my heart, was what I ended up doing for the rest of my life. And that's kind of what I wanted to do, but never knew how to do. Because being an artist is, you know, back when I was being an artist, it was like you could be a painter and, you know, cut off an ear and get publicity or something, but there wasn't a whole lot of options as there are today to be graphic designers and media, web design and all that. And what I realized today, further to your question, is that even though I'm not a world famous painter that is the Museum of Modern Art and has exhibitions all over, I mean, I've had exhibitions all over the world, and I've had a lot of success as an artist, a professional artist, but what I realized, the real success about being an artist, was that art has taken me all over the world to do all kinds of things. And last month I was on a boat. I sailed from Miami to Rio de Janeiro for 19 days on a seaborne cruise, and I got to go for free because I just give talks. I give 5 talks along the way. And then when I got to Rio, I did a workshop there for a company called Equinix, and I had to go buy art supplies. So it was right before Mardi Gras, and we had to go to downtown Rio de Janeiro, where everybody was getting the final touches on their Mardi Gras costume. So the art store was packed, and it was just crazy to see this energy. And I looked at myself and I looked at Angie, and I said, you know, because we do art, we get to experience these kind of things that we would never, you know, we never get to do otherwise. So, you know, art has really opened up. You know, it's not just about making paintings and, you know, having exhibitions. It really was about kind of living a big life, following that, or being led by that art kind of lifestyle. And I mean, being an artist and all the things that that may or may not mean. And so, yeah, I mean, and if any of you are interested, I'm going to be the artist in residence at the Great Wall mid-March to mid-April, painting there. So if anybody wants to come, there's a special deal for this. It's called the Brickyard at the Great Wall. And it's run by an American and a Chinese couple. And, there. So anyway, will be the 35th residency I've done around the world in different places, including boats. So.
Other people have questions?
I have a question.
Sure.
Very high level generic question, but my mom was an art teacher in elementary school, and probably from being raised by her, I think a lot of schools around here, and ours is one of them, they have all of the art teaching is by volunteers. They don't actually have art classes at our elementary school, which is sad. But for my older daughter, who's now in middle school, my younger daughter, I am the docent that leads that. So, I don't know, she's third grade, but which is what, she just turned 9. Any guidance you would give on teaching art to
teaching
young
art
children?
To young
people,
yeah.
Just how to inspire them, how to...
Well, the thing about young people is oftentimes you don't have to. I mean, if they do art, they know they've got some talent. They
sure.
know they, you know, it's just sadly when we get older, we kind of forget and we start to doubt ourselves. So young people, I would just, if you can, just keep them going and create more art. I mean, I've taught art. I've been an art teacher, but I don't see myself as a teacher. I just see myself as a person that stands there and, you know, lets you do whatever you want to do and encourages you to keep going and keep doing it. Because I think being an artist, maybe it's like being a race car driver. The more you do it, the better you get.
Sure.
I think there's, it's not so much that there are no right and wrong answers, but there are, you can never do too much. It's not like taking too much vitamin K, I guess it is, and your skin turns yellow. But, you know, I think for young people, just to, if you have the materials, you know, if you can give them materials and give them interesting places and ideas to draw, like here, I used to draw here all the time. I mean, just for field trips and things like that. I would say that and maybe just encourage them to think of all the different places where art is used in the world. I mean, the design of this heater, the design of this architectural, I mean, art is such a wide, broad subject, if you will, and everybody can do it anywhere. You know, I hate to admit it, but I just went to Apple and I'm looking at getting an iPad Pro. And 30 plus years ago, I remember using one of the first computers that had graphic, you know, pen or something like that.
Sure.
And I hated it. I was appalled. It felt like scratching my fingernails down a blackboard because it was so removed from what I feel as art, making art, because there's no touch and push and pull and all. And it's, you know, as an artist, I'm quite rough and it's very physical for me to do. But actually this, I hate to admit it, but this new pen that Apple has, I'm not advertising here, so I might want to turn that on, but it was really, it's quite amazing what you can do with it. And it really is a great tool. And what I see it, I could use it as is a way to do sketching. Like when I go backpacking or traveling, I used to, you know, I carry my art, my paints and my brushes and my paper and my canvases. And, you know, I look like a Barnum and Bailey circus sometimes. Like Angie and I have traveled all over the world with rolls and boxes of paintings and stuff, and it's real, you know, it's a pain in the ass, to be frank, carrying all this stuff around, getting it You know, we were just trying to get through customs in the Maldives a couple months ago, and the paintings wouldn't fit through the screener, so we couldn't get them on the plane, and then the plane was going to leave without me or my paint. It was just, you know, it's a mess. So anyway, the iPad, you could just take that literally anywhere and do it any time, and it doesn't make anything, it doesn't get the place dirty. Like when we do these workshops, you know, we have to cover the whole place with plastic, and, you know, it's kind of amazing that technology now has gotten to the point where you can, and I think I wouldn't use it as a substitute for doing art. I would use it as a tool to to collect some ideas and to put stuff together compositionally, and maybe put text and photos and drawings and paintings together on one, you know, collage them together. So I see it as a great little tool. It would be very cool to use. But $750, it's not a cheap little tool.
It's true. Well, one of the things I've seen some kids, and I think I had this as a kid too, you know, the blank canvas is the scariest because fear of failure or not living up to somebody else's or your own expectations.
I cover the white. I just throw paint on it. Yeah, I lose the white. I'll paint it pink or yellow or ochre. Ochre's a good color. And the good thing is, I think young people, I don't know if you've noticed it as 9-year-olds, young people have much less of that fear than I think we do as
sure.
we get older.
Yeah, sure.
Making a mistake, and I have pieces of good paper, I think I still have them stored away somewhere, that I bought years ago and never used because it was I've got to do something good. This is good paper. This is like $3. I better do something good on this piece of paper. And so it really inhibited me, and it never, you know, as I said, those pieces of paper are still sitting in the drawer somewhere because I was too scared to do it. So I think maybe the other thing you could say, look, here's papers, not all paper, but you know, here's some art supplies, and you know, it's already paid for. It's, you know, it's for you to use. If you don't use it, it's gonna, you know, it's not gonna get used. So just use it. Use the supplies. And don't be afraid of it. Don't be afraid of wasting it, because there are. You can always paint over it too. You can always paint white back over it and start again, and that gives it more texture and history to it. So.
Thank you very much. I'm going to bring it to a close because I have a granddaughter who's going to be, but I need to watch her do gymnastics at 9:46. So I need to get home.
Okay.